A tēnā tātou katoa, e hui mai nei i tēnei ata, ko Andrew tōku ingoa, he kāria hau Key Learns. Well, greetings to all of you who have gathered here this morning. I'm Andrew, the Learns Field Trip Guide. Haere mai and welcome to the Environmental Guardianship in Tamatea Dusky Sound Virtual Field Trip Web Conference. Now, just before we kick off with your questions this morning, I would like to start with a karakia. Unuhia te pō, te pō whirimarama, tomokia te ao whatu tangata, tātai ki runga, tātai ki raro, tātai ahorau. Humi e, hui e, daiki e. Well, again, a very warm welcome to our speaking skills this morning from Te Ano School, and to our special guest, Maria from Pure Salt. Thank you for joining us, Maria, and taking the time to answer some questions this morning.
Pleasure, lovely to be here and looking forward to hearing what you'd all like to know.
Well, just before we ask some questions, would you like to start off by talking a little bit about the work you do?
Well, it's difficult to talk a little bit about it, but my partner Sean and I, we're really fortunate enough to basically live and work in Fiordland. So we have a boat over there, 27 meters, and we take people, only 12 of them at a time, away for a week to connect with a place. Through whatever means they like. Some people go kayaking, others go diving or go hunting or fishing, whatever it is. But creating that connection with the place for people. So then once people are connected, they can start caring for it and giving back. And that's a lot of what we do. We also do a lot of conservation work and work under the water. Some of the things that you have seen through your field trip as well. So seeing you guys here and getting spreading that vision further is what really gets me excited.
That's great. Thanks so much, Maria. And I do know that we have somebody from Te Ano School who would like to introduce themselves as well and talk a little bit about the work they're doing in class and how it might relate to the field trip.
Atamari, Maria. Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Takatimu te manga, ko Whitestone te awa, ko Te Ana tukukuda, no Te Ana hau. Ko Alana tuku whaia, ko Sean tuku mata, ko Izzy tuku ingoa nā reira. I'm Izzy, and this is Room 3 from Te Ano School. We're looking forward to learning more about Tamatea Dusky Sound.
Oh, kia ora. Thank you so much. What a great introduction. Well, let's kick off with our questions then. Now, I'm not sure if both of your classes are asking or just one of them. So, Melinda, was your class asking questions? I can't remember, or were you listening?
Hello, Andrew. Yes, we have got some questions that we would like to ask,
Great.
if that's
So,
okay.
that's fine. And, Melody, you've got questions too?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so
Maybe too many, so we'll try to limit
that's okay.
it.
We are limited for time, but
Yeah.
we'll just take it in turns. So Melinda, you're room one, is that right?
Yes, it is.
And
Yes.
Melody, your room.
Three.
Okay, one and three. Well, let's start with room one and have your first question, please.
Okay. Yeah. Hi, I'm Liam, and my question for you today is, what's the rarest species in the sound?
What the various species
The
in the sound?
rarest, I think.
Oh,
The rarest, yes.
That's a big question because are you talking above the water or below the water?
Below the water, please.
Below the water. Well, we have a lot of very special species. The probably most notable one is black coral, which is really special to see when you're diving because normally they grow 70 meters or deeper. And in the fjords, because of the special environment, it can grow as shallow as only 5 meters. So you can snorkel with it and see it. So it's a white, really quite tree-looking structure. It's a coral itself that just filters the water. Really cool species if you're into that sort of thing. But we also get tuna coming past, which is, also quite rare and getting rarer by the day. We have really endemic and special things like little nudibranchs, Jason nudibranchs, kind of like slugs under the water. that are pink with white little frills striking over the top, which you find nowhere else in the world, that only live in Fiordland, and the list goes on. So what exactly is your rarest is a very difficult question to answer.
No, thanks, Maria. Yeah, the black coral is interesting, isn't it? Because it's only black when it dies. So it's called black coral, but when you see it living, it's white.
Yeah, confuses a lot of people. But the reason it is because when they first found it, they found it washed up on the beaches. And all the living white things had died. So all you're looking at is a black structure. But when you ever get to go diving with it, look really, really closely, and you see it kind of looks like little white snowflakes on a string. And you see little arms coming out, and each one of those snowflakes is a polyp, kind of like an anemone, if you like. And they filter the water for plankton and feed away. And then as they feed and digest, they poop, and their black poop is black. And that's a calcite substance, quite strong stuff, that builds that whole structure. And they keep living on it, and that's how it grows. So
fantastic.
It's really cool when you're looking really, really closely.
I love hearing about that sort of thing and how... Because the coral is an animal, effectively, isn't it? So, you know, something that seems like a plant, but it's actually an animal, and how it actually lives and grows. Fascinating. All right, well, let's move to room three and have a question from you, please.
How many pests have you found?
How many pests have we found? Lots, and not just us. There's so many different people working over here, probably also some of your family and your friends in different ways, above the water and below. Above the water, we found a lot. And some of the islands, you'll have deer, you have stoats, you have rats, you have possums. You also have invasive weeds, which I guess you can class as a pest if you like. We even found a pig last June, which was a new thing. I know. Pigs were only supposed to be as far as down preservation. So quite a large variety. Also insects, wasps are starting to make their way through. And then below the water, we're at this stage quite lucky. There's only one pest that has arrived so far, and that is Undaria or Wakami seaweed. Have you heard of that before? Nice. Have you eaten it before?
No.
Have you ever had a noodle soup or a miso soup at a Japanese restaurant or a sushi takeaway shop? You know how there's like little green bits floating in the soup? That seaweed there is Wakami or Undaria. So it gets eaten all over the world. And it's originally from Japan and arrived in New Zealand back in the 80s with a ship, like most of our things get introduced. And it's pretty much all around New Zealand's coastlines everywhere. Just Fiordland is really lucky it hasn't arrived here yet because it takes over everything. Have you guys been snorkeling before? So when you go snorkeling, you see all sorts of seaweeds, right? Some red, some brown, some small, most quite small, some really quite tall. We have a lot of variety in New Zealand, all the stuff that belongs here. But Undaria is a really tall brown seaweed, grows really big, and it's really dominant, it's quite bully. So it takes over everything and grows so big and so high that it shadows everything else out. So all our small brown native seaweeds and red seaweeds don't get enough light to grow anymore. And that's why it's not a cool thing to have, especially in around Fiordland, because what you guys see snorkeling would all change completely. And in that top 3, 4, 5 meters, all you'd see was Undaria.
Right. Well, thanks for that. And if you have a look at the videos there on the website, we have a video about Undaria. And there's also an interesting video with Fleur Sullivan, a chef and restaurateur, who talks about all our edible seaweed. So, and it's in a lot of other products too, you'll be surprised. Okay, well, let's go back to room one and have another question from you, please.
Ruby.
That'd be a good idea,
Miss Neil. I'm Ruby, and what tools or gadgets do you use to help your research?
Tools or gadgets, nice. Well, tools is one thing we're all still very short of. Everyone working in the conservation space, there's actually very few. So on land, you would have seen boxes, wooden boxes with traps in them as you go for walks and things. Have you ever been up the Kepler with your class? So you've done that trapping side of things. That's what you see everywhere. But we also use cameras, and we train AI, artificial intelligence, with algorithms how to ID photos that the cameras are taking. And we've also just built a sonic lure or a sound lure, so a little thing that you can put inside that box that sends different noises out to attract pests to the box. Because if things go hunting in the bush, they don't just look for a bit of food on a plate. So putting meat and an egg in a box is a bit boring, really. You kind of want your meal to also make noises and probably move around a bit. So playing with gadgets along those lines and trying to see how that can change things and maybe help us attract more to the place. Does it answer your question? Or would you like more gadgets? Because there's plenty more. I don't know how much you want to listen to.
Well, I love in the warehouse. So the warehouse is where is like the control, like the bridge is another word for it. It's where you drive the boat, right? And there's all these screens and everything. And so you can look at these screens, and the technology is amazing because it's showing where you are, shows your position in terms of dusky sound, tamatea. But there's also like 3D scanners, and you can see underneath where the boat's going and what the bottom of the sea looks like and how deep it is and all the different features underwater. So that's a really important part these days of getting around places, because it's all about navigating safely. You know, back in the old days when you didn't have that technology, a lot of ships hit rocks and things like that. So that's some cool technology.
And Andrew, you have a good point there, because that's technology to not just keep the ship safe, but also help on the conservation side. Because when we did our work around Anderea, you want to know what the topography is like. So those gadgets on board, those 3D sounders, give us a 3D picture of how everything looks. So then we know where to most likely find those species and map where we've covered. So it's really cool stuff.
Yeah. Okay, room three, itching to ask another question.
Do you guys eat the seaweed?
Yes, and not just a little bit. We eat all sorts of different seaweeds. We can't eat the Anderea in Fiordland. Because as soon as you go and pick it up, it releases millions of spores and you're potentially spreading it further. So you don't want to just go and randomly pick it. So the areas where that has come, which is in Braxy Sound and a little bit in Dusky Sound in small spaces, they are managed differently. So we don't go into those areas or play in those areas or snorkel in those areas. So we don't disturb it. But other seaweeds, yes. Heaps. Macrocystis is really yummy. You can smoke it. You can blanch it, like put in a bit of hot water and have it in a salad. Some seaweeds you can have raw. In rock pools, you probably have seen Neptune's necklace. You know, the seaweed that kind of looks like little pearls on a string. Yep. Next time you see that, if it's a clean environment and not anywhere funky, but if you're in Fiordland, out of those rock pools, you'll notice there's a difference in the color. And the very pearls at the end are going to be a bit lighter. That's a new growth. That's the yummy stuff. You can eat the whole lot, but the tastiest are the end. Just take a couple off and have some and see what you like. And
Yeah.
that's okay with all seaweed. Just taste some. And remember one thing, if you like it, don't take everything from that one place. Take a little bit from there and then move to the next rock pool so it can recover again. So it stays sustainable, okay?
Awesome. Yeah. And of course, I can speak from personal experience to say that I ate some seaweed on board Flightless, which is the boat that Maria and Sean operate. And it's really great because, you know, you're just picking things from your local environment. And you can do that on land as well, but you just need to make sure you're careful about what it is that you're picking and eating before you eat it, identify it. Okay, room one. Another question.
Yes, we've got another question.
Hi, I'm Robin. My question is, how many ROVs do you operate?
We operate none. Sometimes researchers will bring an ROV in, but we don't have one on board with us. If we want to go underwater to look what's there, we generally jump in ourselves, snorkeling or scuba diving. And it's the same with the people that come on board.
Good question, though. Yep, that's some interesting technology. Lara, a remote operated vehicle. I think that's what it stands for.
Yes.
Like an underwater drone.
Yeah, which is really good. There's lots of different versions of them. Some small kind of like the small drones that you chuck up in the air to take photos and things. And others are really big and they're even tethered to the ships. So the ship has to have, you know, a system where it can't move. It's being stationary, held by extra propellers and things. So, you know, offshore they do that a lot and big research does too.
Okay, room three.
I'm Levi. And
hi, Levi.
Do you think there's any fish that no one knows about?
Definitely. There are so many things we don't know. That's one thing that still surprises me. There's so many things I think we know, and then I ask a question and nobody has ever even thought about it or doesn't know. Just about every time there is researchers going into Fiordland looking for things, they find new things on top of, above and below the water too. Especially nudibranchs and small fish and microorganisms. And there's also really deep, you know, and you have a shelf just dropping off the coast. There's lots and lots that are still to discover. So still things to be found and to be named if you're keen.
Yeah, talking with Rebecca from Fiordland Marine Guardians, it was really interesting learning about some of the research that she's been doing. And of course, we went to Moana Uta, the marine reserve and Wet Jacket Arm, and she was talking about the hapuka that come up into shallow water. And so I always thought that they were a deep water species. So I learned something about fish behavior, and it's really just because people fish in shallow coastal areas, and so those don't really live there anymore. You can only find them in deep water because it's like their last hiding place. So yeah, it's great to know there's lots of things to find out. So if you're interested in marine science or science, any sort of science, there's still many things to discover. Hey, room one, have you got another question for us?
Hello, yes, we do have another question.
I'm Pippa. When did you start researching?
When did you start researching in the area?
Well, it's not that we are doing all the research. There's lots and lots of people involved, and everyone is doing a little bit in their field because there's so much to do. So we've been operating Pure Salt for 8 years. So as long as we've operated, we've always helped. So for below the water, if people want to come on board and they want to do work with us, then we help to do that. But there's been research going on for a very, very long time, and there's lots more to come. Some of you might have gone to the Marine Symposium over the last couple of days. Yeah, nice. So that afternoon was a very long stint with so many interesting people, everyone only talking for 10 minutes about the things that they were researching. And that was a small number of the people that are going into the place. And the one thing that I learned is how much more there is to learn. So lots and lots more room, anything from marine mammals to temperature changes to, you know, carbon sequestration and, you know, quite different fields. So yeah, if you want to know more, those were also filmed actually by Shelley, who was on the field trip with us too. So they'll be online if you want to have a look at those.
Yeah, I was sorry I couldn't make that, but it's a bit far away for me.
Oh, fair enough.
Bay of Islands. I wake up in the far north of the North Island. Yeah.
The one thing, one little thing I need to share with you guys, because it's still blowing my mind. There was a lady who was taking underwater sound samples, so putting microphones under the water for long periods, doing it for years, and literally having a dawn chorus underwater. You know how the bush goes nuts when the light changes and the birds goes nuts? So does underwater. And it's really cool to hear those different things, you know, shrimps flapping, sea urchins crunching away, fish eating, you know, dolphins sounding in the distance, occasionally propeller hearing from a boat going past. Really, really cool.
I wonder if that's the same in the evening too, because, you know, I'm a keen fisherman, and, you know, the one thing I've learned over the years is the best fishing is first thing in the morning, when the sun starts to come up, and then in the evening when the sun goes down.
There was a definite spike at dusk too. So that's another talk that was wonderful.
Oh, really? That's so interesting. Brilliant. Now I can't remember who asked the question. I think we're up to room. Are we up to room one now again or three?
Three.
Up to three. Okay.
I'm Odessa, and my question is: how did the Andoria grow?
How did they grow? Quite interestingly, just imagine a tiny spore to start with, like microscopic. You can't even see it if you'd have it on your hand. So it lodges itself and it can just hang out for a long time, months and months, years, until the conditions are right. And then it starts growing and it looks like a little leaf to start with. And then it can grow a little bit longer and it develops a really distinct spine through the middle of the Andaria plant. And then as it reaches maturity, at the bottom of that spine ends up being a sporophore, like a little rubbery looking, don't know what you even call it, but you should have a look at a photo to see what it actually looks like. And that rubbery thing on the bottom is what holds the spores. And then the leaf just keeps growing. And the whole structure keeps connected to the seafloor by the hold fast, essentially kind of like leagues that are climbing on, holding on. Okay. Does it make sense? Yep. One thing to understand is it can grow from that tiny little seed to full length, and that could be just about as tall as me, in only 3 months.
Mm. And it came to New Zealand because it with some of those spores just hitched a ride on a boat that came here, yeah?
Exactly the same reason we don't go diving or playing in the areas where it lives, because it could hitch a ride in our wetsuits or in our catch bags, or even just on the hull of our tender.
If you watch the video with Rebecca when she talks about Andaria, right at the end of that video, she dives into like this quite large barrel of soapy water and completely washes herself because that detergent kills any spores that she might have carried. And the boat, the tender was washed down, and yeah, all really, really careful. And that's actually really good practice when you're going from one area to another, is to clean your gear. And particularly when you go onto places like is it Pukenui Anchor Island? That's right, Amarant. Yeah, the pest-free island and any other pest-free islands. You check your gear, you make sure there's nothing hitching a ride there, like seeds or other little critters and that sort of thing that might set up homes and play havoc on the species living there. Okay, well, probably got time for another couple of questions, I think. So let's go back to room one.
Well, that's good because we've only got one more question that we'd like to ask. We've talked lots about the Andaria, and Tessa has a similar sort of question to do with seaweed. If you stand up, Tessa, you could ask your question.
Hi, Tessa.
How much seaweed in the Sound?
How many types of seaweed are in the Sound?
Oh, this is my niece Rebecca. I would hazard a guess. Lots and lots. I would have to find that out. I don't know what number there is, but it's an incredible amount. What I do know is if you go snorkeling and you have a look at even an area meter by a meter, the amount of different animals in that one spot is mind-blowing. And the more you look, the more differences you find and more species you find. So I might have to get back to you on that. We'll take you out for snorkel.
Yeah, has anybody put your hand up if you've actually been to Tamatea Dusky Sound? Well, I see some of them have. That's pretty cool. Well, let's finish off with a question from room three.
How many times has Flightless broke down, if it has?
Broken down.
A couple, and it's like anything, if you do something long enough and often enough, something will happen. The important thing is that you have what you need to fix things, so when things break, there's another pump to put in place and go forward, you know. So not that often, and we always carry the good stuff with us so we can keep going, which is really cool.
It's an interesting question, though, isn't it, Maria? Because, you know, we've talked about technology, and I mean, I've been on board Flightless, and it's, you know, it's an amazing vessel. It's got all the comforts of home, everything set up. There's a chef on board. You know, you never feel like you're going to run out of food and that sort of thing. But you're still in a very remote place, and you know, if things do go wrong, you have to be self-sufficient.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Flightless is actually an ex-New Zealand Navy vessel. So it used to cruise around the shores patrolling. And because it was a New Zealand Navy vessel, the Navy built things really strong with heaps of backup systems. So if you're into engineering and that sort of thing, feel free to touch base anytime. There's lots and lots to talk about just about that, how it all works and how the systems work and what a boat needs to run. That's a whole different chapter.
Well, we have come to the end of our time with Maria this morning. Thank you so much, Maria, for your time and us answering these questions. Now, you don't actually see Maria in any of the videos on the Field Trip website, although there is the profile video where she introduces herself. But we do have a couple of videos where we talk with Sean, which is Maria's husband and business partner, I suppose you could say. So, but yeah, thanks very much. And it's so nice to see you again. I haven't seen Maria since, we've spoken on the phone, but since that trip towards the end of last year. So lovely to see you again and give my regards to the crew. And thanks so much also to our speaking school this morning, Te Ano School, room 1 and 3. You can unmute if you'd like and say thank you to Maria.
On behalf of Room 3, I'd like to thank you for taking the time and teaching us more about Tamati Dusky Sound.
On behalf of Room 1, I thank you and Maria for calling us and teaching us so much about Dusky Sound. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for
taking us. Thank you, guys. And thank you for caring and thank you for wanting to know. And if you ever want to know more, you know where we are. Happy to take more time anytime.
Thanks, Maria. Thanks, Te Ano School. That brings our web conference to an end. Enjoy the rest of your day. And remember, this will be available to listen by early next week on the Field Trip website. Ka kite anō. Mā te wā.
Ka kite.